A light emanates from the base of a tall mountainous cloud and glows brighter until it almost fills the screen. The light transforms into a winged white horse. TriStar, Sony Pictures Entertainment Company. In brown sepia tint, an airship glides towards a futuristic city of tall towers set in the middle of a wide stretch of ocean. The background fades to black, leaving just the city within a golden brown rectangle. Centropolis Entertainment. The film slips off its spool and the sepia tint continues through scratched, grainy footage of a choppy ocean. A map of French Polynesia is superimposed over the waves. A Roland Emmerich film. Godzilla. The sea washes against the shore of a windswept island. A sign on a wire mesh fence reads, Atoll de Morua, Site Nucléaire, Keep Out. A hand writes numbers and draws lines on a map of the island's shoreline. A reptilian creature with a long tail and ridges down its back swims along the ocean floor. An iguana crawls along a barren landscape while similar creatures clamber out of the sea and onto the shore. More grainy, sepia images. A palm tree crashing to the ground. A military base of long huts. Bulldozers clearing away fallen trees. And men wearing gas masks and full radiation suits photographing readings on a Geiger counter. A reptile buries its eggs in the sand. Military personnel in radiation suits prepare equipment and a wall clock counts down. A ridge-backed reptile crawls along the beach past some half-buried eggs. A military aeroplane flies overhead as a huge explosion billows up from the island. Both men and reptiles watch as the dazzling light is followed by a huge mushroom-shaped eruption of gas and fire. Savage winds buffet trees and deserts, sending sand and other particles scattering down across the half-buried eggs. Story by Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio, and Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich. Screenplay by Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich. Directed by Roland Emmerich. A large fishing trawler sails through the night across a stormy stretch of the South Pacific Ocean. Rain lashes the windows as a middle-aged oriental man with a bald head sits in the radio room watching sumo wrestling on a portable TV. He wears round glasses and uses chopsticks as he scoffs noodles from a round bowl. Elsewhere on the boat, a group of oriental men wearing rubber pinafores and gloves gut fish in a large, gloomy factory. The man in the radio room glances over to an instrument panel as two small lights flash red and green. He gets up and walks across to the instruments. A sonar display shows a large shape bearing down on the ship from a northwesterly direction. The man grabs a phone receiver. The men in the factory look at each other in bewilderment, then scatter, panic-stricken, out of the room and through a corridor. Two more crewmen charge into the radio room, and one of them grabs the radio handset. The sonar display shows the large shape heading on a collision course for the ship. One of the crew runs into a cabin and babbles at an old oriental man who sits up on his bunk, mouth agape. A hefty impact sends the ship listing heavily to one side. Circuitry sparks, crewmen are thrown off their feet and the old man tumbles out of his bunk. The crew stand and look around uneasily. The old man watches in terror as a giant set of claws rips through the hull. Water gushes in as the ship tilts further to starboard and a huge ridged tail smashes through the radio room window. Rain pours down as a young man drives a pale blue minibus along a rural track. He wears a fisherman's cap back to front, along with black rimmed glasses and a set of lightweight headphones. Various danger symbols hang on an open wire mesh gate as the man drives through, and a nearby sign reads Chernobyl. Charred, twisted trees are on one side of the track, while several electrical pylons stand on the other, along with a large grey building barely visible through the rainy haze. The man stops the minibus and gets out. He opens the rear door and takes out a set of thick electrical cables with crocodile clips attached to the ends. He walks onto a patch of wasteland and pushes two long metal prongs into the soft, wet earth. He then returns to the minibus and goes to attach the other end of a cable to an electrical terminal. The man jumps as the terminal sparks. He attaches the crocodile clip and suddenly dozens of worms emerge up through the soil around the metal prongs. The man picks up a small wire mesh box and walks across to the wasteland. Taped inside the lid of the man's box of equipment are several photos of an attractive young woman with blonde curly hair. The man crouches on the wasteland and puts several squirming worms into his wire box. A large double-rotored helicopter touches down behind him, and he turns and stands. A squad of armed soldiers streams out of the chopper and jogs towards him. The soldiers jog past and empty the minibus. Two men in suits and overcoats step up to the young man.
A permit! Damn, how do you say permit? I have a permit!
Dr. Nico Topopopoulos?
It's the Topopoulos.
Kyle Tarrington, I'm with the U.S. State Department.
Nick looks back to his minibus.
What are they doing?
You're being reassigned.
But my work here isn't finished.
It is now.
The clear, green ocean washes against the shoreline of an island. A vast mountain range towers over the beachside road where three black Lexus cars drive in convoy. A caption reads, Papeete, Tahiti. The vehicles pull up outside a simple clinic and four men get out. A middle-aged man with a receding hairline sits in a corridor of the clinic. He picks up a small metal case and stands as the men come in. He shakes hands with the tallest of them.
Monsieur.
There's pressure from the Americans. The tall man replies, What have you told them? Nothing yet. Are there any survivors? They come to the door of a ward and the middle-aged man replies, Only one, sir. He was lucky. He opens the door and they step inside. Medics stand by a bed as the tall, unshaven man steps over, looks down at the patient and says, Get them out. The middle-aged man gestures the medics to leave, then takes a handheld Geiger counter from his metal case. He passes the sensor over the patient, the old Oriental man from the trawler. The tall man, Philippe, says, Ask him what happened. Another man with glasses speaks to the old man.
Naniga okota. Naniga okota.
Philippe sparks up a cigarette lighter and slowly passes the long flame to and fro in front of the frightened old man's eyes.
What did you see, old man?
Gojira. Gojira. Gojira.
Philippe's soothing expression becomes serious. Nick is on board a small twin-engine passenger plane which swoops down over the ocean. A caption reads, Golfo de San Miguel, Panama. The plane soars over the top of a bell tower. Below it, an army colonel in combat fatigues is on a field telephone.
That's affirmative!
It's landed on the water.
Hey, where are you going with my stuff?
Soldiers have unloaded Nick's belongings and carry them across a jetty.
Hello? Hello, that's very delicate. Thank you.
The colonel.
Dr. Nico Topopoulos?
It's Topopoulos.
Whatever. Come on, get these people off of the pier!
Excuse me, sir, do you mind telling me what I'm doing
What's
here?
What's your step? Don't talk to anybody. Come on, get them off the damn pier!
Soldiers monitor scrubland with Geiger counters.
What is all this, some kind of spill?
Yeah, something like that.
Look, I work for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, but accidents and spills are not my field.
We know!
Do you know you've interrupted a 3-year study of the Chernobyl earthworm?
Yeah, you're the worm guy, right?
The radioactive contamination in that area has mutated the earthworm's DNA. You know what that means?
No, but I got a feeling I'm about to find out.
It means that because of a man-made accident, the Chernobyl earthworms are now 17% larger than they were before.
17%, huh? Sounds pretty big.
They're enormous. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm a biologist. I take radioactive samples and I study them.
That's great. Here's your sample. Study it.
What sample?
You're standing in it.
I don't see it.
Nick's standing in a wide trench and looks down in bewilderment. An aerial view shows the trench to be actually an enormous footprint with three sharply pointed toes. The realization dawns on Nick and his mouth opens in amazement. A little later, the colonel is walking across his makeshift base.
Colonel! Colonel! That was a footprint! I was standing inside of a footprint.
That's right.
But there's no animal in the world that makes footprints like that. Is there?
I told them this is not your field, but they never listen to genius.
Nick, this is Elsie Chapman of the National Institute of Paleontology. She's your boss.
Those were footprints, right?
Yes, they were.
Anybody see what made them?
Actually, no such luck.
Well, it all happened so fast that nobody knew what hit them until it was over.
Elsie!
Yeah?
Tape's in. The French finally released it.
The tape shows the fishing trawler.
Yeah, this is a Japanese cannery ship that was attacked and sunk near French Polynesia.
We believe it's connected. By the way, Dr. Craven, have you met the worm guy?
Craven holds out his hand and Nick hesitates.
Sorry, summer, cold.
The tape shows the old man in his hospital bed.
Gojira. Gojira.
Nick looks puzzled. Two choppers fly over the army base and follow a dirt track which leads across a meadow. Giant three-toed footprints are embedded in the earth at intervals either side of the track. In the dark, rain-swept New York, the blonde woman from Nick's photos gets out of a yellow cab, another woman hurrying her along. The young woman enters the lobby of the WIDF news building and runs for the elevator. She walks into a busy open plan office and dumps the bags. Another woman's on the phone.
They're saying it's supposed to rain like this all week. What's with the bags, huh? Cayman's groceries.
Oh, girl.
A short dark-haired man's arguing.
Speak of the devil. What?
The women turn.
This one is the midget version. This one makes me look like a trained professional. Can we put this on the five, please?
You think I should ask him?
No.
I'm gonna ask him.
No.
I will.
Audrey walks across to the dark-haired man.
Did you talk with Humphreys?
This is not the place.
Just tell me, did you talk with him?
Teddy, consider it. It's between you and Rodriguez.
Are you serious? He's going to consider me for the job? What else did he say?
Well, why don't we talk about it over dinner tonight? Your place.
Mr. Cayman, you're married.
Yes, and you're very beautiful. Have I ever told you that before?
Mr. Cayman?
Audrey's shocked.
I've been doing research for you after hours and weekends for over 3 years. This is a very important job to me. I'm too old to be your assistant anymore. I need to know this job is going someplace.
So, have dinner with me tonight.
I can't.
It's your choice.
Cayman walks off.
Okay, let's go.
Charlie, yep. Say hello to your new co-anchor, Miss Desiree Pond.
Hello, Desiree. Welcome aboard.
Cayman sits. He's much lower than Desiree.
Mark?
All right.
Can I have a pillow, a phone book, something?
He lifts himself on the arms of his chair.
Hello, New York. Today at 5, we'll ask Fat Pat, when will this rain end?
Jeeps head down a dirt track in Great Pedro Bluff, Jamaica. Elsie?
So, 3 years digging up worms in Chernobyl, was it? How did Mrs. Tadopoulos handle that?
It's Tadopoulos. I'm actually not married.
Really? A girlfriend, or...?
No. Oh. Perhaps I work too much.
So, do you mean to tell me there's no one who holds a... special place in your heart?
She stares at Nick.
No. Not for a long time now.
Well, you may be the wrong man for the job, but I think you're cute.
He looks awkward.
Oh. Thank you.
The red-headed Elsie smiles and turns away. Nick looks at the frowning Craven.
She thinks I'm cute.
The jeeps carry on down the bumpy track, led by a white sedan with a roof light. Two military helicopters soar over the top of them and follow the route of the track towards a coastline about half a mile away. The wreck of the Japanese trawler stands on the shore with several military vehicles parked alongside it. A group of three large gashes have torn through the rear section of the hull, with another three deep grazes towards the front section. Further chunks of the hull have been ripped out towards the upper deck. The choppers circle the vessel as the jeeps arrive and pull up. On the beach, military personnel arrange electrical equipment as Jamaican locals stand and sit among them staring at the ship. Colonel Hicks, Elsie, Craven and Nick stare in amazement at the wrecked trawler, and Nick steps closer. Hicks points to two men in civilian clothes who are filming the ship with a camcorder.
Who the hell are they?
Benoit Saint-Bonsant!
Sergeant, get those people out of there!
They're with me.
Is that right? Who are you?
La Rochelle Casualty and Property Insurance. We're preparing a report.
And you're pretty damn fast.
That's our job.
Well, your people are getting in the way of my job.
Colonel, what do you think could have done this?
Listen, Mr. Roach, you get your people out of here or I will.
Hicks marches off with some of his men. Philippe, wearing a pale grey suit and sunglasses, watches him go. Nearby, Nick crouches down on the beach and examines several half-buried tins of canned food, then looks up at a jagged section of hull. Philippe calls out and beckons to his men.
Terminé, on plie.
He strolls in Nick's direction.
On y va, c'est terminé. On plie, terminé.
Using tweezers, Nick peels a shard of pink flesh off a section of ripped hull and places it into a plastic bottle. Philippe watches him, then bows his head and strides away. Three small fishing boats bob beneath the night sky on the eastern seaboard of the United States. Three men sit inside, one of them playing cards.
Captain, getting a cup of coffee?
Take too long.
And then he's gonna come and kick your ass.
Yeah, well, I'm in my luck.
The boat stops drifting, then slowly begins moving backwards. In the wheelhouse, a young man looks up from his newspaper, while downstairs the bearded captain stares up at the ceiling.
What the hell is that dump head doing?
The young man pushes the throttle forward as the captain comes out on deck.
Arnie! Arnie! Hell's wrong! Why are we slowing down?
I don't know. She's at full throttle. Maybe she's heavy in the net.
The captain, wearing a black cap and dark waterproof jacket, walks to the rear of the boat. He stands on the very edge of the stern and looks down at the foaming water with a puzzled expression. A fisherman on a neighbouring boat calls out to him.
Yo! How can we start? Are the nets full?
I don't think so! We must be caught on something!
Bring in the nets! Bring them out! Pull them in now!
What's going on?
We're bringing them in!
Lenny, the engines are heating up! Should I shut them down?
No! Keep on!
The water suddenly froths up as the boats are yanked backwards.
Try it! Try it!
The fishermen scatter back and try to loosen the lines.
Gotta move! Cut the net!
The three boats are pulled backwards in unison. Halogen lamps glow at the top of a tall mast, which is suddenly pulled down.
Down!
The masts on each boat snap under the strain from the lines and crash down onto the deck. Some of the fishermen grab axes and desperately hack at the taut ropes. Foaming water washes over the stern of the boats as they're gradually pulled below the surface. The men abandon their vessels as the three boats vanish below the waves. The fishermen pop up through the surface of the water, gasping for air and grabbing onto chunks of floating wood. The young man from the wheelhouse cocks his ear.
You hear that?
The captain looks around anxiously. Suddenly, one of the boats bursts up through the surface of the sea like a giant torpedo and crashes back down onto its side. Hold, Nick examines the shard of flesh through a microscope while a soldier crouches down beside Colonel Hicks.
Colonel, excuse me, sir. Just got a report of three fishing trawlers going down.
Well, what makes you think it's related?
The trawlers were pulled under, sir.
Other team members look up at Hicks.
Jesus Christ. This thing's only 200 miles off the eastern American seaboard, and we don't even know what the hell it is.
It's the rope of the Allosaurus.
What?
Some type of enormous reptile that we believe died out in the Cretaceous period.
So where's it been hiding the last 60 million years?
What about the traces of radiation? The radiation isn't an anomaly. It's the clue. This animal is much too big to be some kind of lost dinosaur.
Well, don't tell me what it is and tell me what the hell it is.
Well, what do we know? It was first sighted off of the French Polynesian Pacific, right? That area has been exposed to dozens of nuclear tests over the past 30 years.
Uh-huh, hence the radiation.
No, more than that. I believe that this is a mutated aberration. A hybrid caused by the fallout on these islands.
Uh-huh, like your earthworms?
Yes, yes. We're looking at a completely incipient creature. The dawn of a new species. The first of its kind.
Nick looks down at a map showing the eastern coastline of the USA. Heavy rain clouds gather and a streak of lightning flashes over the New York skyline. A caption reads, "The city that never sleeps." Audrey scuttles into a cafe where Lucy, her workmate, sits at a table with a dark-haired young man.
My life sucks. Oh, please. Your life doesn't suck.
His life sucks.
Because I'm married to you.
I cannot believe he put the moves on me after everything I've done for him.
He is scum. As far as he's concerned, you're just a pair of breasted talk.
Hey, there's an image.
I'm telling you, he is dirt. He's a douchebag, gutter slime, dog crap, puke chunk.
Hey, I'm eating. You don't see I'm eating?
Audrey, you're too damn nice. That's your problem. Nice gets you nothing in this town. It's dog eat dog. You gotta be a killer to get ahead. You know what I'm saying? I'm sorry, baby, but you just don't got what it takes. You don't think that's true, do you, animal?
Yeah, pretty much. You're a nice person, you know? Nice guys finish last.
Well, I can be tough if I want.
Yeah, sure.
I can. I can.
No, yeah, no.
Whatever.
She looks up at the TV.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Could you turn that up, please?
News footage shows Nick and the team in Panama.
Sometime in the last 12 hours. Not known yet whether or not there
it's
are
Nick.
Any survivors.
Who is he? He was my college sweetie. Wow, he looks so handsome on TV.
There seems to be an unusually tight security around the crash site.
Audrey watches Nick walking towards a mountain range with Hicks and his men. The rain continues pelting down as wooden crates of fresh fish are unloaded on a side street. A man in a forklift truck loads boxes into the back of a lorry. An old man walks along a wooden jetty carrying a folding stool and some fishing tackle. A couple of old winos sit on the dockside and call out to him.
Hey, Joe! Gonna catch one of them little fish in the East River?
I hope so. But you never know. I mean, today could be my lucky day.
The only thing you want to catch is a cold!
Joe reaches the end of the jetty and casts his line into the water. He then settles down on his stool and takes a swig from a bottle of beer. Suddenly, his float bobs down below the surface, and he calls back to the two winos.
Hey! I got a bite!
The float's snatched back down again.
Boy, do I have a bite!
Joe struggles to hang on to his fishing rod.
Hold it on, Joe!
You got a big one, baby!
Hold on to it now!
You want to fight!
Joe furrows his brow in determination, but the rod is yanked out of his hand. He looks out across the water as a short distance away, the surface swells up like a giant hill, with two black points protruding at either side. Joe gapes and holds his hands to his face as the swell of water approaches the jetty. The two rugged old winos stand in awe. The tall swell of gushing water bears down on the jetty and Joe turns and runs. Planks are ripped up and thrown through the air as the jetty is destroyed directly behind him. The terrified Joe just makes it to the dockside as the last of the jetty is ripped apart by the force of the water. At the fish market, workers stop and listen. Traffic drives along a bridge spanning the river as an enormous reptilian tail appears over the low wall, then a huge lizard-like head with wrecked boats lodged in its horns. A vast creature, similar to a Tyrannosaurus rex and the size of a tower block, steps over the bridge and a boat crashes down onto the road. The fish porters stare in disbelief as a boat smashes down in the middle of the street, then a huge, scaly, three-clawed foot. People abandon their cars and flee. The driver of the fish lorry wears headphones and reads a paper, oblivious to the approaching behemoth until it bites into the lorry. Porters are thrown out as the vehicle's lifted into the air and the driver falls out of the cab. He hangs onto the steering wheel for dear life, then loses his grip and falls as the beast chews the lorry, then drops it. Elsewhere, a crowd's gathered at a statue of Washington.
On this beautiful New York City day.
People in the crowd look around with puzzled expressions.
But I did!
Cops behind the mayor also look around in bemusement. On a main street, another cop leans on his patrol car as a huge tremor shakes the ground. The cop turns to look at his car, then backs away as further tremors shake parked cars and send pedestrians reeling. A tremor almost knocks Mayor Ebert off his feet.
Oh my God!
The crowd scatters as clouds of dust, bricks and masonry fall from a tall building at the end of the main street. The top of the reptilian creature's horned head appears through the dust clouds as it rounds the corner. Mayor Ebert's a short, tubby man with grey hair and glasses. He and his entourage run.
Let's get out of here.
People run for their lives as the beast pounds down the street behind them. A WIDF Cayman paces as he speaks on the phone. The receptionist notices the lights flickering.
I am grateful for the fact that we're getting a new set. I know that represents a commitment on the part of management. Here's what I don't understand. Why, we're the only station in town that doesn't have the Korean grocery hold up as our lead. I mean, what's our lead? Rain, again.
Mom?
I know, precious the people at the parties you go to, that we're the classy station.
Cayman's too wrapped up to notice the creature's head go past his office window.
Whose name I can't even pronounce. A real story.
Sir, I think your story just walked by the window.
The creature just passes the window as he turns.
What?
He turns back as the tail goes past.
We can get in the Korean grocer's hospital room.
So did this Romeo have a name?
Nick Totopoulos.
Jesus. Is that why you dumped him?
No.
How long did you guys go out for anyway?
Nearly 4 years. Girl, I'm surprised he didn't ask you to marry him. Well, that's the problem. He did.
A tremor.
Ugh, tell me that's not another parade.
A tremor shakes the whole cafe.
I don't think that's a parade.
Please stand by.
What the hell is that?
Bricks and masonry fall onto the street outside as the creature's huge green feet pound past. Its tail lashes back and smashes the window. Animal runs out and Lucy shouts after him. Animal gapes and grabs his video camera from the news van.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh, come on, you bastard, come on! Ah, jeez.
What's
that?
Animal races off and clambers over the roofs of abandoned cars. He runs to an intersection, then freezes, rooted to the spot. About 20 yards away, the creature stands in the middle of the road. It steps in Animal's direction as he feverishly tries to jam the tape into the camera. Finally, he composes himself for a second, calmly pushes the tape in, then puts the camera on his shoulder and starts filming as the beast towers over him. Animal suddenly moves the camera away from his eye when he sees the beast's enormous foot coming right down on top of him. The foot slams down onto the ground, then rises again. Animal was standing in the gap between two of the creature's clawed toes. He turns to see it lumber away down the street, turning a corner and smashing a floor out of a building with its tail. Animal watches the beast with a mixture of terror and elation. A convoy of military vehicles under police escort drives across a bridge. Shortly, the convoy comes to a crowd of reporters and cameramen. A cameraman films Nick in one of the trucks as it drives into a compound of army tents located across the Hudson River from Manhattan. The caption, Mobile Command Center, New Jersey. A soldier holds an umbrella over Colonel Hicks as he gets out of a truck.
Sergeant O'Neill, sir!
Any word from the mayor's office?
Yes, sir,
water. They've agreed to evacuate the city. They called out the National Guard.
Wait, evacuate Manhattan? That's over 3 million people. Has that ever been done before?
I don't think so.
Where is he now?
We lost sight of it, sir.
You want to run that by me again?
O'Neill looks uneasy.
After its initial attack, he disappeared.
Secretary of Defense Burke is on the line.
Hicks walks off.
I don't understand. How could something so big just disappear?
Well, we're not sure, but we're scanning the area now.
Yeah, he probably returned to the river.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, look at it. It's perfect. An island, water on all sides.
They look at Manhattan.
But like no other island in the world, this is a place where he can easily hide. He's in there someplace.
The troops all gather around a TV.
Oh, I'm Charles Kamen, in the WIDF News Center, and ladies and gentlemen, we New Yorkers like to think we've seen it all, but what you're going to see right now will shock you beyond belief. This is footage we have that indicates that there is a dinosaur loose in Manhattan. WIDF's exclusive footage was shot barely half an hour ago. WIDF cameraman Victor Animal Pilati survived.
In the WIDF newsroom, the staff applaud as Animal walks through.
Great stuff, Animal. Great skills.
Yeah, I thought Lucy was going to kill me.
Damn right, you crazy wop.
Okay, people.
What were you thinking?
We have to be completely relocated to the New Jersey station for the 10 o'clock broadcast.
Animal, you're riding in the chopper with Kamen. Now, let's go. Lift off. Come on, everybody. Come on.
You going to be all right?
Yeah, Audrey's going to spend the night with us.
Cool. A threesome. That's excellent. Right, I'm a little tired.
Lucy pushes him away.
People are reported killed. Thousands of others injured. Civil defense stations are being set up throughout the island of Manhattan.
Audrey watches footage of Nick and Elsie on the news report. She looks down thoughtfully as Kamen sweeps in and points his brolly at her.
My bag. My bag.
Oh, Mr. Kamen? Mr. Kamen, wait. Mr. Kamen? I've got a lead. I know a guy who's on the inside with the military.
Not now.
Oh, you don't understand. I can get us some great inside information.
Look, this is the moment when the big boys go to work, okay, honey? Bag.
Kamen gets into an elevator. Audrey throws him his bag and the doors close. She's stolen Kamen's press pass. As helicopter gunships fly over the city, Audrey and Lucy run out of the WIDF building.
This is crazy. Come on, let's go.
Wait up.
Lucy holds Audrey's hand and leads her through the rainy, gridlocked street. A police unit in full riot gear bursts out of a blue and white van and marshals the panicking crowds as Lucy and Audrey make their way down into the subway. Above the city, Kamen's in a WIDF chopper as Animal films him.
In what city officials are describing as the worst act of destruction since the World Trade Center bombing, hundreds of thousands of people have jammed the streets, the largest evacuation in this city's history. And many people are not happy about it. Among those unhappy citizens are the managers of the stores along pricey 5th and Madison Avenue. The Warner Brothers and Disney stores have been totally cleared out by looters. And the streets are jammed. Traffic is at a standstill. Emergency vehicles cannot have access to any emergency that may develop. And there is a slow but steady stream out of the city, as if Long Island or New Jersey were any refuge in this time of crisis.
Ah, this is great. If I'm wrong on this evacuation, they'll string me up from the Liberty Torch.
Didn't we agree that we weren't going to have any sweets until after the election?
Back off, Gene.
Gene, Mayor Ebert's aide, tries to take the mayor's packet of sweets, but Ebert snatches them back venomously. The bald, middle-aged Gene holds up his hands defenselessly. The mayoral helicopter touches down by the command center, where a group of men in suits are waiting for it.
Who the hell are they?
It's a contingent of building owners and business representatives from the community.
I don't have time for this nonsense.
Campaign contributors!
Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, I share your concerns. I want to get this city back in business as soon as possible. Please.
La Hausser Insurance, we represent nearly 13% of the buildings in your city. You can count on our emotional and financial support.
Well, thank you.
Philippe puts his hand on Mary Ebert's shoulder and secretly clips a tiny microphone to his collar. The mayor heads on through the crowd to a black limousine and Philippe drifts away from the pack. Kamen jumps out of a news truck and makes them march through a line of policemen.
Coming through,
Whoa, where's your ID?
What's the matter? Don't you watch TV?
You gotta have press ID.
I've got ID. I had a badge on my bag here.
A subway train.
I don't know if this is a very good idea, Liz.
What are you talking about? You stole it. Finally, you got a little chutzpah. Don't wimp out on me.
What if Kamen finds out?
Look, how often do you think you're gonna have an ex-boyfriend on the inside of a major story? It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Could you stick this thing? You got any glue or something?
I'm sorry, I left my forgery kit back at the office.
Lucy sticks a photo of Audrey over Kamen's picture on the press pass. A man wearing a brown uniform of bomber jacket, trousers and baseball cap carries donuts and coffee and gets into the back of a brown UPS delivery van where Philippe and his other men are monitoring screens and receivers. The man, Jean-Luc, hands out coffee and paper bags to his colleagues, Jean-Pierre, Jean-Philippe and Jean-Claude. Their boss, Philippe, wears headphones and steps away from a radio receiver. He delves into a bag, pulls out a ring donut and looks at Jean-Luc.
Le croissant?
Non, monsieur.
Philippe sips from his paper coffee cup and screws up his face.
Ah, you call this coffee?
I call this America.
Philippe listens in on a meeting between the mayor, Hicks, and other military personnel.
Now hold on. You're telling me that in an election month I've evacuated this entire city for nothing? Do you realize what this evacuation is going to cost the people of this city?
We have been monitoring all the waters around the island, and as far as we can tell, this thing has not left the area.
Yes, but you don't know for sure.
We have a strong reason to believe it may be hiding inside one of the buildings within the restricted area.
But you don't know for sure!
Mr. Mayor, we cannot give the all clear until each and every one of these buildings has been checked. What is it?
Excuse me, sir. That may be more difficult than we originally projected.
Ah, terrific. Terrific. More good news.
O'Neill turns to Hicks.
We've run it into a problem.
Do you believe this?
No. I don't know what's going on.
You never know what's going on.
Thank you.
A convoy of army vehicles pull up outside a subway entrance. Hicks and O'Neill get out of the first vehicle.
Right here, sir. M, call in.
Let's go, people, fall in, downstairs!
Hicks and O'Neill head down into 23rd Street Station, followed by Nick, Elsie, Craven and some soldiers. Inside, one of the platforms has been torn up and demolished, and a huge tunnel dug into the ground. Hicks's men walk to the edge and shine their torches down into the cavernous pit. Railway lines have been severed and sparks occasionally shower out from the fractured electrical cables. O'Neill speaks to Hicks.
Lieutenant Anderson and his men found this afternoon.
Soldiers examine the roughly widened tunnels by torchlight.
We were checking the office building above when we discovered the floor was gone.
We discovered that he could burrow his way through the tunnels. We realized that, he could be outside the quarantine zone.
Holy Christ. How many tunnels lead off the island?
Only 14, sir. We've checked them all. He hasn't used any of them.
We have them all sealed up.
Yes, sir.
He goes to leave, then comes back.
How? How would we do that, sir?
You fill them with cement, brick them up, put landmines in them, bombs. I don't care! Make sure the damn thing doesn't leave the island.
Yes, sir.
O'Neill salutes and leaves. Hicks's men keep their assault rifles poised as they examine the gloomy tunnels.
You know, he's not some enemy trying to evade you. He's just an animal.
What are you suggesting?
Well, when I had to catch earthworms, I knew that the best way to get them was not to dig them out, but to draw them out. All we need to do is to find out what he needs, and he'll come to you.
As one of the soldiers steps through the ankle-deep water in the tunnel, he shines his torch across several fish, which flap helplessly on a slab of broken concrete. It's New York. Hicks strides into a large tent at the Mobile Command Center where a soldier sits at a radio receiver.
Rob! Where are they now?
Delta Niner, what is convoy position?
Command, they have just entered the city.
A convoy of dump trucks goes over the Brooklyn Bridge. The helicopters sweep over the Empire State Building. Tanks rumble into position. A soldier dashes up to Sergeant O'Neill as he talks on a field telephone.
I have no radio contact with the convoy. I have a special ground confirmation.
Sir,
right now.
Convoy ETA, 10 minutes. Sir.
All right, so we've got to hurry. Here we go.
Command your positions now. 10 minutes. ETA, go, go, go. All systems go.
A command post is set up on a roof overlooking Flatiron Square with an array of communications and surveillance apparatus. Undetected, Jean-Luc sets up a camera on a mast and radios Jean-Claude.
Is it good?
Oui.
Philippe's team have set up in a motel room overlooking the command center. Jean-Claude turns on a row of monitors showing the view of Flatiron Square from the planted camera.
On a l'image. Tu peux dégager maintenant, Jean-Luc.
He says, we have picture, you can leave, Jean-Luc. And to Philippe, he says, we have a signal, sir. Nodding, Philippe sips his coffee and winces.
You said this was French roast.
Ah oui, regardez. C'est marqué French Roast.
Philippe proffers his cup.
More cream.
In Flatiron Square at the corner of Madison Square Park, a gold clock on a pillar reads 20 past 8. Nick buys a disposable camera from a dispensing machine. Big concrete barricades have been arranged in a ring in the centre of the square. Sergeant O'Neill marshals the arrival of the convoy of dump trucks.
Bring him in! Yeah, come on, bring him back! Oh!
Nick steps up to him.
I sure hope this plan of yours works.
I'm kind of hoping that myself.
Gene and the mayor enter the command centre.
You give approval for this?
They just appropriated it.
12 of the city's dump trucks. Would you like to tell me what's going on around here?
Actually, no, I wouldn't. Don't touch anything. How's O'Neill doing?
Everything is on schedule, sir.
You sure you didn't know about this?
No, no one told me anything about this.
Why do I even keep you around?
Positioned around the ring's concrete perimeter, the dump trucks tip their skips up at a steep angle.
Jump!
The skip doors open and hundreds of silver-grey fish pour out into the ring. Watching this on a monitor, Jean-Claude turns to Philippe.
Très bizarre, non?
No. Very clever.
The army build up a towering mountain of fish.
All right, let's pile it on! Let's get out of here!
Nick and O'Neill stand side by side, regarding the pile.
That's a lot of fish.
O'Neill shoots him a worried glare. Later, O'Neill joins his men on the rooftop command post overlooking Flatiron Square. He keeps an eye on the bait, then lowers his binoculars wearily. Ground troops lined up behind barricades a short distance back from the square keep their guns aimed at the bait. With them, Nick looks at his watch. It's 5 to 9. At the command centre...
Come on, you bastard, it's supper time.
Look at all that friggin' fish. Is this gonna work?
With his hood over his head to shield him from the rain, Nick surveys the square. With a concerned expression, he sees the steam rising up out of the manholes. Nick gets up, jogs out towards the square, then stops. Seeing him, O'Neill frowns. Nick dashes back towards the soldiers.
We gotta get these manholes uncovered! We want them to smell the bait! Come on!
The soldiers get moving.
Let's go! Let's go! Aye, aye,
they gallop up to a steaming manhole and prise off the cover with a crowbar. They shine a torch down.
Let's get those lids off! Go, go, go!
What the hell is he doing?
Okay, this way. Come on. All right, you heard him. Let's go. Come on, over there.
They find another manhole.
This one?
Yes, sir. I understand, Skipper.
Nick spots another manhole.
Give me the crowbar,
sir.
Nick takes the crowbar, jogs to the manhole a couple of blocks back up Broadway from the square, and shifts the cover aside. Steam billows out. Peering down into the inky blackness, Nick knits his brows and, rather shakily, gets to his feet. Nick looks up, his mouth hanging open. Suddenly, a rip appears in the tarmac. The jagged fissure tears the boulevard between his 2 feet and continues behind him. He turns to look at it, then he twists back round and looks into the manhole. A fountain of gunge spurts out of the hole, and then... the monster, Godzilla, bursts through the road. Nick makes a run for it, but the segment of road with the manhole in it lands vertically in the ground ahead of him, blocking his path. Godzilla squeezes his entire gargantuan body out of the hole in the street. Nick stares, awestruck. Godzilla pulls his hind legs, twice as long as his forelegs, free of the road. Nick winds on the disposable camera. Nick takes a picture. At the flash, Godzilla recoils slightly. Nick lowers the camera, taking sudden fright. Identifying the source of the flash, the beast lowers his head down, stopping just yards in front of Nick. Godzilla's bottom jaw alone is taller than Nick. Soldiers take position behind a taxi to Nick's right.
Set up here.
Gasping with fear, Nick gestures with one hand to stay back and wags his finger warningly to the troops. The beast opens his mouth and releases a formidable howl. Oh. Nick's almost blown off his feet with the rush of wind and spray. Godzilla sets off towards the square. At command center, Colonel Hicks is drawn to the screen. On the map, an indicator shows Godzilla heading quickly down Broadway towards a fish symbol. At his command post, Sergeant O'Neill looks up from his comms equipment and sees Godzilla lurch past, blocking his view entirely. He gawps, dumbstruck. The huge beast swings his tail, knocking over their satellite dish. The men duck. The tip of his jagged tail cuts a sway through the side of the building, showering some soldiers with bricks and sending others tumbling backwards. Everyone gapes, slack-jawed, as Godzilla steps over the troops and reaches the mound of fish lying in the middle of the street. He buries his snout in it, taking massive mouthfuls with each bite. Scurrying back to the soldiers and tanks lining the street now behind Godzilla, Nick stands by the James Madison statue. He takes some photos of Godzilla's hindquarters. Sergeant O'Neill pokes his head up from behind the ledge.
We need bigger guns.
At command center?
We've lost communication, sir.
Get us back online. Fire at will!
Sergeant, fire at will.
Fire, fire, fire!
The troops open fire. Streaks of light arc through the air. Two rockets are fired. Godzilla ducks out of their way, so they hit the slim triangular Flatiron building, blasting its center to smithereens. Fragments of stone cascade onto the soldiers beneath. Godzilla veers off, ripping a chunk out of a building with his snout. Nick makes a run for it, but trips over some tubes on the ground. In passing, Godzilla knocks the statue over. It falls face forward over Nick, pinning him to the ground. Running the gauntlet of gunfire, Godzilla crushes one tank underfoot and flips another one over. He thunders down the street, chased by a pair of jeeps with men perched on top, machine guns blazing. Godzilla stops, turns round, opens his maw and belches out a ferocious fireball which obliterates everything in its path. At command center...
O'Neill, you better tell me what the hell is going on!
He's gone, sir! He's gone! He's gone! Echo unit in pursuit!
Three Apache helicopters swoop after the monster. As Godzilla tramps down the road, the helicopters whistle along a parallel street, then bank round into the same street. The Apache team leader, Echo One, radios the others.
Follow my lead!
Through his windscreen, the team leader sees Godzilla dead ahead. Mouth agape, Godzilla bolts down another street, his big tail slamming lumps out of the surrounding buildings each time he rounds a corner. The Apaches pursue him.
All systems are. Echo 4 armed.
The Echo 4 pilot tries to get a lock on his target as Godzilla picks up pace.
We're doing 80 knots and he's pulling away, sir.
Echo 1.
I've got him locked on.
Locked on, sir. Target is locked on.
Fire the damn mission.
Echo, 1-3-4, fire at will. Fire sidewinders.
As Godzilla clambers up onto a building, the Echo 1 pilot fires two rockets. They miss and hit the Chrysler building. The pilot's jaw drops as the stainless steel Art Deco pinnacle, severed at its base, begins to topple off slowly. A line of jeeps approaching the building screech to a halt. The soldiers leap out as the pinnacle crashes into the street. Echo 1.
That is a negative impact. I repeat, that is a negative impact.
Negative impact, sir.
Negative impact? That's the goddamn Chrysler building we're talking about here.
You told me he had it locked on.
Echo 1, we had you locked on.
The heat seekers can't lock, sir. He's colder than the buildings around him.
A young guy is looting a store. A 50s monster movie is playing on a TV.
Freddy!
What?
Let's go before we get caught!
Jimmy, you know that bad feeling I get when something really bad is gonna happen?
Yeah.
I'm getting that feeling right now, man.
Godzilla barrels towards them. They dive out of the way and his foot misses them by inches. The Apaches go for another strike.
Descend to 300 feet. Lasers on. All systems on.
Target, 11 o'clock.
The choppers pursue him, spewing darts of light from their machine guns. Godzilla stops and faces them. He beetles on around the high-rise buildings, appearing like a normal-sized lizard running around a model village. The chopper's gunfire peppers lines of bullet holes in the facades, exacerbating the damage wrought by the beast himself. Some bullets hit their mark, but Godzilla barely seems to notice. Zipping round another corner, the pilots cease fire. The Echo 4 pilot frowns, confused.
Where'd he go?
They round a corner into an empty street. Echo 1 flies ahead of the other two. There's a hole right through one building.
Sounds like. Get together, guys. Prepare to fire.
Echo 4, ready.
Echo 2, ready.
Fire!
Hovering in front of the mammoth hole, the three choppers open fire, spitting spikes of bright orange light through it. A vast fireball blossoms, obscuring the actual target. Eventually, they cease fire and peer through their rain-smudged windscreens at the Inferno. The Echo 1 pilot cracks a cautious smile.
I think we got him!
Godzilla crashes through the building behind them. He swipes one chopper, flinging it against a wall. It explodes. The other two make a bid to escape, but Godzilla snaps one of them in his jaws. At Command Center...
We've lost Echo 1 and 2, sir.
Gah! Echo 4, where is Target?
The Target is snapping ferociously at the chopper's tail.
Jesus! He's right on my tail, sir!
Echo 4 seesaws frantically back and forth.
I don't think I can shake him!
As the helicopter soars round a corner, Godzilla makes another lunge, missing by a hair's breadth. Entering another street, the pilot looks over his shoulder.
Oh, I think I lost him.
But Godzilla's right underneath him, stretches up and chomps the chopper. In Command Center...
We've lost Echo 4, sir.
The mayor scowls.
What the hell is the matter with you people? You've caused more damage than that goddamn thing did!
All right, Mayor, calm down. Just have some candy.
No, I don't want any candy. Leave me alone.
Godzilla rears up on his hind legs and hugs onto a tall building. Jagged forks of lightning rupture the broiling sky above the rain-soaked, reptile-ravaged city of New York. In Flatiron Square, Nick scoops up a gooey sample of Godzilla's blood. O'Neill?
I can't believe it, I mean. He did all of this and, we did nothing to him.
Oh, that's not true. We fed him.
Here at the Command Center in New Jersey, there is no new information to report because the military has clamped a total media blackout on whatever is going on out here. Officials are not saying anything about their attempts to contain or control this creature, and now I can see back from their expedition to Manhattan.
Okay, no, the situation is under control. It's under control. We have containment.
No, wait for me. Okay.
Through the crowd, Audrey sees Nick stepping out of a vehicle. Sheltered under her patterned orange umbrella, she bites her lip, and, seeing him head off, she follows. He goes inside the Morris Street Pharmacy.
Can I help you, young man?
Yes, do you have any at-home pregnancy tests? Especially ones that look for gonadotropic hormones or clomiphene citrate?
No, this...
She produces four different types of test.
This is all we've got.
I'll take all of them.
Okay.
Well, you must have quite some harem.
Nick looks over and double takes.
Audrey? Oh my god, is it Audrey? Is that you? What are you doing here? Hi. Hello. Wow, how much is that?
$26.
God, you look... Wow. How've you been?
It's good to see you, Nick.
He counts out the money.
So you made it.
What?
You're a reporter, huh?
The press pass.
No, that's good. That's good. That's what you always wanted. I'm happy for you. Really? I am. Thank you.
Nodding uncertainly, Audrey tucks the press pass into her coat. Nick heads for the door, opening it for Audrey.
You're still mad at me?
Well, you left without a phone call, a letter, nothing, all this time. Yeah, I guess I am still a little mad.
They walk on.
That was 8 years ago. Some people change.
Most people don't.
They stop on the pavement and face each other.
Well, I'm sorry you feel that way.
She walks off. Nick stares plaintively after her.
Audrey.
She stops and turns back to him. He frowns.
You're right. 8 years is a long time. Can I make you a cup of tea?
She smiles.
Sure. That'd be nice.
In his tent.
I still can't believe it. I mean, how does a guy go from anti-nuke activist to working for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission?
He's busy.
Well, when you and I went to rallies together in college, we helped to create awareness. But now, from the inside, I'm able to affect real change.
And exactly what changes are you trying to affect?
I'm preparing a census for the government. I'm cataloging new species that have been created as a direct result of nuclear contamination.
Is that what you think created this thing?
Yeah. Found a blood sample earlier this evening.
How close did you get to the thing?
I got pretty close.
He carries on with his tests.
And what else did you find out?
Well, we know that he eats tons of fish. He's amphibious. He's a burrower. And...
he takes a drop of yellow liquid from a flask and puts it onto the pregnancy test, which goes red.
He's pregnant.
Her interest piqued, Audrey comes over to him.
He is?
He? A very unusual he. I mean, obviously, these tests weren't designed for this, but fundamentally they look for the same hormonal patterns to indicate pregnancy.
Wait, I don't get it. If he's the first of his kind, how can he be pregnant? I mean, doesn't he need a mate?
Not if he reproduces asexually.
Where's the fun in that?
Nick starts gathering his stuff.
I kept thinking, why would he travel so far? But it makes perfect sense. Lots of animals travel great distances for reproduction. That's what he's doing in New York. He's nesting.
Nesting?
Yes. Do you realize that a lizard can lay up to 12 eggs at a time? Think of it.
Well, I didn't know that.
Forgive me, I have to get this to the lab, see if I can confirm all this.
Heading off, he stops.
I'll be right back.
He leaves. Left on her own in the tent, Audrey scratches her head, then starts to nose around his makeshift laboratory. Below a collection of test tubes, vials, flasks, bottles and other apparatus are pinned some photos of Audrey and of her and Nick together. Wrinkling her brow, she studies a picture of Nick giving her a piggyback ride. They both beam happily. A smile flickers over Audrey's lips, but then her frown returns. As if snapping out of a daze, she looks around. Her gaze alights on the tape labelled First Sighting, Top Secret. She picks it up and slots it into the video player. Footage of the old Oriental man appears.
Gojira. Gojira. Gojira.
Now, US Army aerial footage of the enormous footprint in Panama with its three sharply pointed toes and Nick standing in the middle. Beside the footprint, a half-decimated house. The film ends. Audrey snatches the tape out of the player, slips it in its box and puts it back on the top. Chewing her lip, she ponders. She looks at the words, Top Secret, handwritten in red capitals. She grabs the video in her coat and hurries out of the tent. A fleet of Apache helicopters flies above New York. An overhead view of choppers flying through the streets with the cars streaming below them. Two choppers peel off at each right-angled intersection. Each pilot has a tracking device to search for Godzilla. Another search party on foot venture through a ruined section of the subway. Exploring a large round tunnel, one soldier advances some paces ahead of his patrol.
Come on, Joey. There's nothing down here.
I'm telling you, man, I heard something.
You heard nothing. It's a dead end.
Shredded electrical cables overhead scatter white sparks on the tunnel. The adventurous soldier shines his torch on the dead end. The wall has a strange, rough texture.
Anything? Nah. Nothing down here. Nothing at all.
As he turns away, the dead-end wall moves. A vast eye opens. Jagged teeth loom as Godzilla moves away from the end of the tunnel. In the news truck...
This is why, in this case, all the king's horses and all the king's men may not be able to put the Big Apple together again. Audrey Timmons, WIDF News.
Yes.
That's it. You owe me a beer.
You like it?
Yeah.
Oh, I should have worn my hair back.
No, it looks great.
Oh, you liked it? Yeah. Okay. Good.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah, what?
How the hell did you get a hold of this material?
Well, you know, it's like you said. Nice guys finish last, right? Thank you. I love you.
Ah, yeah, sure.
What? Audrey dashes out, leaving Animal speechless. Outside, she strides up to Murray, who's talking to Cayman.
Murray! Come here a second.
Hold on a second, all right? Well, what is it?
I've got exclusive footage of other places this thing has attacked.
You do?
Yeah.
Whose story is that?
Mine.
She holds up the tape. Cayman eavesdrops. Standing at the window of the motel room, Jean-Pierre spies the activity at the US command center with binoculars.
Ça bouge en bas.
There's a lot of movement down there, military, police. He steals some of Philippe's food. Philippe objects. It's my breakfast. Jean-Pierre says, I'm hungry. Listening in to the command center, Jean-Claude hushes them.
If we can lure him into a more open area such as this portion of Central Park, I think we should be able to take him down.
Last time you didn't even scratch it.
That's not true. Our worm guy, I mean, Dr. Tatopoulos here, has found blood.
Yes, I did.
So you see, the only thing we need to do is get him out into open terrain and use weapons that don't rely on heat-seeking technology.
Excuse me, sir. I think the situation has become more complicated than that. The blood that I collected revealed that the creature is either about to lay eggs or already has.
Are you trying to tell us that there's another one of those things out there?
No, Governor. I don't believe so.
Wait a minute. Wait. Then how can it be pregnant? What is this, the virgin lizard?
No. It reproduces asexually. That's why we have to find the nest as soon as possible. Otherwise, up to a dozen are going to be born, each one capable of laying eggs on its own. Very quickly, we could be looking at an enormous population.
Well, so after we kill the creature, then we'll search for the nest.
No, I think it might be too late by then. These eggs are going to hatch very quickly.
How could you possibly know that?
The fish that we found on the subway. He's not collecting all his food just for himself. He's preparing to feed his young.
The mayor eats some candy. Philippe asks, do we have something on this guy?
On a quelque chose sur ce type?
Ouais.
Jean-Philippe gets Nick's file.
Alors, c'est un professeur. Nick. Nick Tatopoulos. On l'appelle l'homme vert de terre.
They call him the worm guy. Philippe snatches the file and studies it. Audrey joins Animal and the crew in a bar where the TV's on.
Yo! Excuse us, please. Where you been? They just told me on your spot. It's up right after this.
Thank you. Can you turn it off, please?
Yo! Can you turn it off, please, the TV?
If Dr. Tatopoulos is right, we have to act quickly before this problem escalates.
So you want to divide our efforts based solely on some wild theory?
Sir, Nick's come through for us before, and if he feels strongly about...
Come through for you? Colonel, your campaign's a disaster. You weren't even able to keep this thing from coming to Manhattan.
Excuse me, gentlemen, but I think we should see this.
Look at the methods and motivations of Manhattan's newest unwanted pest.
The old man.
Godzilla. Godzilla.
Godzilla. That's what Japanese sailors called him in song, a mythological sea dragon who filled their hearts with fear.
Oh, my God! You stole my report!
And it's a reality, our modern-day terror.
I don't believe it.
Who is this Godzilla? Where did he come from? Why is he here?
And it's Gojira, you moron!
A direct path can be traced from Manhattan to French Polynesia, where nuclear tests have been going on for more than 2 decades. Research team member Dr. Nick Papadopoulos believes the creature may be nesting, using Manhattan as ground zero to cultivate the species. This despite the fact that the combined might of the United States military has been unable to subdue...
You went to the press with this?
No, I haven't talked to anyone.
They mentioned you by name!
Yeah.
You gave them the tape?
No, I didn't give them the tape. No, it's in my tent right now. Oh my God, she took it.
General Anderson leans forward.
Pack your stuff, mister. You're officially off this project as of now.
Hicks shifts in his seat. Dumbstruck, Nick leaves. Elsie stares sadly after him. In their motel room, the Frenchman watch Cayman's TV news report. Jean-Luc inquires.
Qu'est-ce qui se passe là?
What's going on? Philippe puts down his paper.
We're leaving.
Holding a sheet over her head, Elsie runs across the command center into a tent. She catches her breath.
I'm so sorry about all this.
Carrying his bags, Nick steps up to her, grave-faced.
Make sure that Hicks finds that nest before it's too late.
I'll try.
Nodding, he ducks out into the rain. Elsie watches him tramp away across the command center. One officer holds an umbrella over him, another carries his briefcases. Audrey's in a phone box.
What do you mean he's not there? A second ago you told me he was on the other line. Please, it's urgent. I really need to talk to him. Yes, Nick Tatopoulos.
Spying Nick heading for a yellow taxi cab, she hangs up. As he loads his luggage into the boot, she strides across the street and stands in front of him, soaked to the skin.
You're leaving?
He scowls at her.
Why? Is it because of me? Because of the
Well, what did you think was going to happen?
You never said it was off the record.
I shouldn't have to, Audrey. You were supposed to be my friend. I trusted you.
Animal steps out of the bar and sees Audrey talking to Nick.
Nick, there's something I have to tell you. Look, I lied to you. I'm not a reporter.
Still by the open boot, Nick eyes her suspiciously.
When we broke up and I first came out to New York, I was so sure I'd make it. But I haven't. That's why I needed the story so bad. I just couldn't tell you I'm a failure.
Leaning on the closed boot, Nick heaves a disconsolate sigh, then steps up to Audrey.
And you thought that made it okay to steal my tapes?
No. It was a terrible thing to do. I never should have done that.
Audrey gazes entreatingly at him. Nick mulls it over, then climbs into the taxi cab.
Good luck with your new career. I really think you have what it takes. Newark Airport.
As he motors off, Audrey stares guiltily after him, her blonde hair wet and straggly.
Sorry.
As the taxi sweeps past Animal, he runs out into the road.
Oh, hey, yo, come on, give her a break, will ya?
He leaps into his van, parked across the street. He sets off after Nick. The taxi splashes through a puddle, drenching the pavement. They round a corner into a road running alongside a flyover. A signpost saying airport points up onto the flyover. The taxi misses the slip road.
Excuse me, is this the best way to the airport?
The cab driver ignores him as they approach a harbour where various ships are moored.
So where are you going? Hey! Hello?
The central locking is activated, trapping Nick.
Okay, stop! Stop the car right now!
The cab stops.
All right, now let me out of here!
The partition window slides back.
I'm afraid they can't do that.
Nick takes a good look at Philippe.
Hey, I know you, don't I? Yeah. Yeah, you're that insurance guy.
Agent Philippe Roche. DGSE. Direction Générale des Services Extérieurs.
Sounds big.
Philippe presents his ID.
French Secret Service.
Nick takes it.
Oh.
I thought you might like to know that your American friends have decided not to look for the creature's nest.
What? Are you sure? How do you know that?
We know. Trust me.
Trust you? You hijack me and you expect me to trust you?
Yes.
And why should I do that?
Because you are the only one who wants to find the nest as much as I do.
Taking back his ID, Philippe twists back round in his seat and the cab speeds away and steers off the quayside. A short distance behind, Animal stopped. He climbs out of his van. The taxi enters a huge warehouse where Philippe's team are making preparations. Rows upon rows of guns and rocket launchers are being unloaded and laid out on top of large square boxes, a Jeep's being sprayed camouflage green. Philippe and Nick climb out.
How did you get all this stuff into the country?
This is America. You can't buy anything.
Well, why all the secrecy? Why aren't you guys working with the U.S. military?
I'm not permitted to speak of such things.
Hey, you said that you needed my trust. Well, then I need yours.
Philippe eyes him up and down and nods.
I am a patriot. I love my country. You understand that?
Sure.
It is my job to protect my country. Sometimes I must even protect it from itself, from mistakes we've made. Mistakes that we don't want the world to know about.
Talking about the nuclear tests in the Pacific?
Yes. This testing done by my country left a terrible mess. We're here to clean it up. Y'a du nouveau?
Non. Rien d'important.
Animal climbs up a ladder on the outside of the building and peers through a broken window into the warehouse.
They are setting the next fish trap at 8:30.
We know how to get into the city. Just don't know where to start looking.
Eyeing Philippe tentatively, Nick steps up to a subway map laid out on a desk and points.
Here. This is the 23rd Street subway station. That's where we first found the fish. That'd be a good place to start looking.
So you're in.
Nick glances round at Jean-Claude and Jean-Pierre.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in.
Très bien.
I always wanted to join the French Foreign Legion.
Bravo. Bienvenue.
Back in the city, Animal jumps out of his van and runs up to an apartment block, greeting one of the many people sheltering in the porch.
Hello.
How's it going?
He pushes his way inside to find hordes of people crammed into the front room.
Hey.
He picks his way through the crowd and over to Lucy in the kitchen.
Honey?
Hi, sweetie.
Who the hell are all these people?
What? I couldn't just let them sleep on the street.
She hands out drinks.
Where's Audrey?
In the bedroom, crying her eyes out because of you.
Me? What did I do?
All that you gotta be vicious stuff you filled her head with.
Get out of here.
You go in there and you talk to her right now.
Audrey's watching TV in her bedroom.
Contrary to some frivolous reporting, we have absolutely no information whatsoever to make us believe that there are any eggs of the creature in the city. There's no need for panic. Repeat, there's no reason to panic.
Animal comes in and sits on her bed.
It's all my fault. Oh, what have I done, Animal? What have I become? Look at me. This isn't me. I don't do stuff like this.
You made a mistake, right? It happens.
Yeah, well, I just totally screwed up with the only man who will ever care about me.
If I told you you could make it all up to him, would you?
Of course I would.
All right, so get this. After he left you in the street there, I kind of followed him. Figured I'd talk some sense into the guy, you know? Next thing I know, he pulls into this warehouse with all these French wackos in military outfits. They want to try to sneak back into the city tonight.
They're going after the nest.
If he finds it, I think that you should be the one to let the whole world know that this guy was right all along, don't you?
What, you want me to follow him into the city?
Yeah, we both will. Come on, it'll be fun.
No, I don't know. I've already made such a mess of everything.
Yeah, you really did, Audrey. Listen, I'm going after him. You can come with me or not, okay?
Armed with his camera and a torch, Animal opens up the window.
What are you doing?
Can't let Lucy know. She'll hurt me.
In the warehouse, Philippe inspects his men's U.S. military attire. He takes a French cigarette out of Jean-Philippe's mouth, then gets Jean-Pierre to take his helmet off, revealing a back-to-front baseball cap. Philippe hands each man a stick of chewing gum, and they pile into two jeeps.
What's with the chewing gum?
Makes us look more American.
Oh, really?
Joining Philippe in the front, Nick looks at the gum-chewing Frenchman.
Just let me do all the talking, all right?
Philippe steps on the gas, but the jeep doesn't move an inch.
It's not in gear.
Animal pulls his van up by a wire mesh fence, dodging the searchlights of military vehicles. He and Audrey get out.
Follow me, this way.
Animal nips through a hole in the fence. Audrey follows.
You okay?
Joining hands, they jog across an area of rubble-strewn wasteland to a tall building. Creeping inside, Animal leads the way down a narrow staircase.
Come on.
What is this place?
It's a vent that leads down to the subway tunnels underneath here. Should take us right to the 23rd Street station in Manhattan.
They reach a subway track.
Well, you gotta be kidding me. Aren't there rats and stuff down here?
I'm a little bit more concerned about lizards at this point. Big, ugly, nasty, large lizards.
Philippe's team arrive at the Jersey entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel, guarded by armed US soldiers. As he slows to a halt between two guards' booths, Philippe rolls the window down and glances over at Nick, who's also in combat fatigues. A guard shines his torch into the jeep.
Who you boys with?
Philippe gives him a cursory look.
We're with the 3-2, sir.
I didn't ask you, soldier.
Oh, well, Sergeant O'Neill just called down for us. He wants us to join him right now, sir. Thank you.
The soldier looks at Jean-Claude, then Philippe.
You got a problem talking?
Well, no, sir, I'm fine.
Nick's amazed.
All right, keep it moving.
Oh, thank you very much.
As the jeep rolls on, Nick glances quizzically at Philippe, who grins proudly back at him.
Elvis Presley movies. It was the king.
At command center, the radio technician calls Colonel Hicks to the phone.
Sir, O'Neill online.
O'Neill, do you read me?
A pile of fish stands in Central Park.
I'll come for O'Neill.
Well, how are we doing?
Well, so far, so good. We're right on schedule.
We're good. We're good.
O'Neill looks nervously through his binoculars at the choppers hovering overhead. Underground, Animal and Audrey reach a point where the ground has fallen away, bringing the subway track to an abrupt halt.
Whoa.
They spy the French team.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah. There they are. Kill your light, kill your light.
They turn off their torches. Animal points his camera.
Well, come on, how do we get down there? We're gonna lose them.
Philippe's men move through the waterlogged crevice. Animal and Audrey clamber down to a subway train that has plunged off the track and is lodged at a steep angle in the rubble.
How the hell do they get down there?
I don't know.
They peer down into the train.
You don't think they climbed down this thing? Whoops. Oh, jeez.
Animal accidentally kicks a can, which slips and bounces down through the train. Nick signals Philippe and his party to halt. The ground begins to shake. Animal and Audrey are clambering down through the train.
Careful.
They emerge at the bottom, ducking under a tangle of wires and pipes.
There, give me your hand.
I got you.
Jean-Luc looks around him warily. His teammates shine their torches on a chunk of rock above them. A light embedded in it fizzles out. Audrey turns to Animal.
Do you hear that?
What?
The right-angled end of a pipe lying in the shallow water shudders. Nick looks around, eyes wide with terror. All of a sudden, Godzilla crashes through the wall of the tunnel ahead, releasing a ferocious roar. The team back off. As Godzilla labours towards them, causing a shower of rubble, Nick and the French team beat a hasty retreat, finding refuge in a large round alcove. They all hunker down, their torchlights flashing over the rough, wrinkled skin of the lizard as he crawls past the alcove, his gigantic bulk splintering stone. Animal films Godzilla as he lumbers on all fours straight towards him. Audrey legs it, pausing to shout back at Animal.
Animal, come on!
Hunched over, Animal scrambles after her. The pair take cover in the space just beneath the fallen subway train, and the behemoth passes right by them. Leathery folds of skin stand out under his gigantic neck. Braving the flying debris, Animal points his camera as the beast thumps out through a rounded opening, his tail sweeping back and forth until he disappears from Animal and Audrey's sight. Their torchlights penetrating the hazy murk, the French team venture towards the opening. Dust and rubble fall from the ceiling.
I guess we go this way.
Nick leads the team on. Positioned high on a rooftop, a soldier scours the urban jungle through binoculars. Hearing a noise, he scurries across to another ledge and peers down to see Godzilla trudge up Madison Avenue, his spike-covered back as wide as the street itself. In Central Park, a soldier rushes up to Sergeant O'Neill.
Sir, we spotted him in Section 5.
Section.
Combat position! Here we go, combat!
At the command center, they track Godzilla's position on the computerized map.
All right, heading north to Section 5, sir.
In the park.
Do not fire until he has cleared the buildings and enters the park!
At the command center, the mayor and his entourage gather around the computer screen as Godzilla's position marker closes in on Central Park. The fish trap is located in the sheep meadow well into the park. Godzilla peers round a building. O'Neill's men are stationed close by. One soldier cocks his gun. O'Neill lowers his binoculars. Godzilla's orange eye takes in the searchlight shining up at him. Godzilla ducks his head forward. O'Neill and his troops cower apprehensively behind a wall and train their guns on the monster, who takes a step forward. Godzilla advances, the ground shaking with every step, skyscrapers silhouetted against the dark sky behind him. He dips his head, then goes down on all fours. He surveys the US battalion with their searchlights, tank cannons and rifles pointing straight at him. He lowers his face close to O'Neill and his men, close enough to smell. They hold the weapons as steady as they can. Godzilla clenches his razor-sharp teeth. One man retreats. Godzilla swings his head to the side, revealing his squarish profile. O'Neill radios the command center.
Wait until he enters the park.
Lifting his head again, Godzilla clocks the mound of fish across the park, illuminated by the two big floodlights either side. Blinking with two sets of eyelids, he turns his head again to view the awaiting army. O'Neill's impatient.
Come on.
Godzilla bows his head, then opens his mouth wide.
Damn it! Fire! Fireball!
The troops let rip. Rockets are fired, but just hit the surrounding buildings. Seeing Godzilla retreat, Colonel Hicks slams the phone down. Godzilla bounds over a low building into the narrow street. A great flock of helicopters sweep in from all sides, their cannons blazing. Another battalion are positioned ahead of Godzilla.
Fire!
Two rockets are launched. Godzilla adroitly ducks them both. They whiz instead towards the pursuing choppers.
Raven flight evasive maneuvers!
The choppers dodge the missiles, which instead slam into a building. Men scatter in panic as Godzilla sends tanks flying.
Target is in the clear. He's headed towards the West Side Highway.
Tanks, mobile rocket launchers, and armed troops lining the West Side Highway unleash their firepower, hitting Godzilla. Undaunted, he launches himself into the air, diving over the raised highway and landing in the Hudson River. The words "contact lost" flash on the command center computer screen. Admiral Phelps pats Hicks on the back.
Don't worry, the Navy has a little something there waiting for him.
Three nuclear submarines lie in wait in the murky depths of the Hudson River. On board one, the USS Utah.
All stations report man for battle station, sir.
Aye. At order depth, sir.
Aye. We've got him on sonar. Utah closing in.
Make final preparations. Prepare to fire.
Godzilla slips through the water, his front legs tucked by his sides, his hind legs stretched out behind him. On the USS Utah.
Aye, aye, manned and ready. Torpedo room reports manned and ready, sir.
Final bearing in shoot.
Are we locked on?
Aye.
Red lights go on.
Are we locked on?
Aye, aye, sir.
Locked on, Captain.
Number one, stand by. Fire. Torpedo one, peered and left the two.
On the sonar screen, the Utah's crew watch the torpedo speed towards the target. Godzilla swerves out of its path, the missile follows. Command center radio technician contacts the other two subs.
Indiana and Anchorage closing in.
Henson, what's the status?
We are locked on and closing in, sir.
Fire number one.
The Anchorage fires its first torpedo. On a blue screen, the missile symbol heads towards a moving white cross. Admiral Phelps watches nervously. Godzilla dips down, avoiding it. The heat-seeking missile arcs round, joining the other in pursuit of the monster as he hurtles through the water. The words "collision alert" appear on the screen in the USS Anchorage.
Sir, the target's heading right at us. All back full.
Aye, aye, sir. All back full.
The Anchorage attempts an evasive maneuver, while Godzilla continues to make a beeline for it. The sub's captain watches the screen.
Stand by for impact. In 10 seconds.
Godzilla closes in on the sub, with the two torpedoes chasing his tail.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Godzilla swoops underneath the Anchorage, his dorsal spikes ripping a gash in the hull. Water rushes into the sub. General Anderson can barely believe his eyes when he sees the missiles collide with the sub. A tower of water bursts up from the surface of the Hudson River. The command center radio technician turns to Hicks.
We've lost the Anchorage, sir.
Godzilla curves and sways his long body from side to side to push himself through the water. A screen on the USS Utah tracks Godzilla's new course.
He's shifted course, sir. He's heading back towards Manhattan.
Full ahead. Close in and lock on.
Prepare tubes 3 and 4 and lock on.
Aye, aye, sir.
Close on Godzilla's tail, which sweeps powerfully to and fro, are the remaining subs, the Utah and the Indiana.
Stand by 3. Fire. Torpedo 3. Peered and left the 2.
As both subs fire their torpedoes, one of the ensigns starts a stopwatch.
Impact in 8 seconds. 7. 6.
Godzilla thuds into the Hudson's bank and tears at the stone wall with his claws.
3, 2, 1.
The missiles hit the wall either side of Godzilla. Two vast bursts of water rise up from the bank.
Direct hit!
Yeah!
Got it.
At command center.
Congratulations, sir. Good job.
Yeah, well done. Got
it. Heaving a sigh, Hicks looks back at the screen, showing the message, "Target destroyed." Emerging from a billowing cloud of dust, Godzilla floats lifelessly down through the water to the riverbed. Nick and Philippe make their way through a deserted subway train. Their torch beams dance over the fish littering the floor. Stepping out of the train, Nick's gaze alights on something up above him. His mouth hangs open with astonishment. Philippe follows his gaze.
What's up there?
Beneath an enormous hole in the ceiling, an illuminated sign says Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena. They clamber up to the hole, passing a disused basketball net. A couple of fish caught in it wriggle uselessly. Close behind, Animal and Audrey step over the carpet of fish.
This is a good spell.
Reaching the sign, Animal shines his torch towards the hole.
Oh, Audrey, look at this. He trashed the garden.
Oh, man. Now I'm pissed. Hey, is that them?
Yeah.
They spot their torch beams at the edge of the hole. Philippe's brigade reached the upper level. Silhouetted against the amber light and frequent stabs of flashing white light, the men negotiate a path through the detritus. Here too, the floor is littered with fish. The shafts of hazy light from their torches skip about for a while, but then all converge on an egg, at least 10 foot tall with a rough, leathery outer shell. Beside it, another egg, and beside that, a third. Nick sidles up to Philippe, a look of amazement on his face.
3 eggs. I thought there'd be more.
And you were right.
Jean-Claude stands, dwarfed by more eggs, chocolate brown in the eerie light. Philippe takes a few steps towards him, then looks back at Nick, who looks over his shoulder to see yet more towering eggs.
Oh my. Wow. There's gotta be more than 20 eggs here. Oh, way more.
With bolt cutters, one of the team cuts a chain and shoves open the mesh gates to a danger high voltage enclosure. Inside, he finds a control panel and throws the switches. The massive round arena is flooded with light. The stalls and court are filled with hundreds of eggs, with fish shored up around them.
Stop counting.
Fire licks the edges of the court, and at its center, 2 crossed beams of light point upwards. Animal and Audrey struggle up to the arena.
Could you help me?
Yeah, you're right.
Yep.
Animal sniffs his hand.
Whoa.
Audrey and Animal shine their torches onto the eggs. Philippe's men attach explosive charges to the sides of the eggs. Philippe walks between the eggs, shining his torch on his men. He goes up to Jean-Claude, who says, "We don't have enough explosives."
On n'aura pas assez d'explosifs.
Merde.
Audrey shines her torch up across the space while Animal films.
What the hell are they doing?
Nick takes a photograph of one of the eggs with his disposable camera. He steps up to the egg and looks around in wonder. He stands close to the dark, glossy, veined surface of the egg and places his fingertips against it. He removes his hand, then touches the rough surface again. He leans his ear to the side of the egg. Philippe strolls up behind him.
Nick, we have a problem.
The massive egg starts to judder and vibrate. A gnarled lizard's head bursts out of the side of the egg. Philippe and Nick recoil. The lizard breaks its way out of the egg. Philippe and Nick slowly turn to see all the other eggs moving. They cast their torch rays across them. Animal is filming a lizard emerging from its egg.
Oh my god. God.
Come on. Let's go.
1 second, all right? 1 second. This is unbelievable.
More long-necked baby zillas emerge. One of them bends its head down and picks up a large fish from the pile on the ground.
Don't you think we have enough already?
I just won't.
Animal turns to see a lizard creeping up behind Audrey.
Yeah, that's good for me. There's plenty. We should, let some.
They both face the leathery-skinned lizard.
Startle it.
One of the baby zillas, with its dinosaur-like head, appears to be sniffing Nick and Philippe. who both sniff their jackets.
We smell like the fish.
I think we should leave now.
I think that's a good idea.
White light flickers around Audrey and Animal as they back towards an egg. A scaly arm with long, spindly claws pokes out of the egg. Audrey and Animal run. Another lizard springs on its massive haunches towards Mick and Philippe. The babyzilla, five times the size of the men, bounds along with its long, tapering tail waving behind it.
Come on!
The arena is now writhing with newborn lizards. Philippe radios. With hungry lizards lolloping along behind them, Philippe and Nick tear down a corridor and burst through a set of double doors. They slam the door shut. Philippe grabs a piece of wood and rams it through the handles, then gets on his radio.
Lock the doors now! We have to keep them contained inside! Come on, let's go!
Philippe and Nick run down a metal-walled corridor. Jean-Claude and Jean-Luc attach the last of the explosives to the eggs and make for an exit. They turn to see one of the lizards with an explosive device dangling from its mouth. The two men run towards a set of double doors. A pair of lizards see them and open their cavernous mouths. The men close the doors behind them. Setting the detonator, Jean-Pierre looks up to see a lizard above him. As Jean-Pierre sniffs his hand, the lizard jumps down. The lizard stamps Jean-Pierre onto his back. Jean-Philippe runs to a set of doors. He tries to close them, but a lizard bursts through and attacks him. Audrey and Animal run towards an exit, which is blocked by two crouched, hissing lizards. Behind them, another lizard roars, revealing its sinewy throat and rows of jagged, tombstone-like teeth.
You see that?
All right, on three.
Okay.
Three!
They charge towards the exit, dodging the snapping reptiles. Closing two sets of doors behind them, Audrey and Animal enter a tiled washroom.
Whoa! This is where the next, like, get showered and everything.
Oh, God!
Audrey slaps Animal's arm. They run through to a set of double doors. Audrey tries them, but they're locked.
Great! Now what do we do?
I'm standing here now just outside the Jersey entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel, where thousands of angry refugees are demanding to be let back into the city. All major arteries into the city are clogged with Manhattanites who are both jubilant that Godzilla's defeat.
Yes, I understand.
Mary, your office is being swamped with phone calls.
I know. Do you have any idea what's going on out there? The phones are ringing off the hook with people screaming to be let back into the city.
We're sending divers into the river now to retrieve the body.
That thing is dead. What are you waiting for?
Colonel, we've got to start a search for the nest.
Elsie, we've been through this already.
What if Nick is right and we blow this whole thing? Sir, this could be the only chance we have to do something about it.
Colonel Hicks and the mayor exchange a look.
Captain, organize a search party. I want a complete sweep of the entire city and the subway.
You don't have the authority to do that.
Try and stop me.
In the arena, Philippe kicks the glass cover on a fire hose. He pulls out the hose and ties it around the handles on the set of doors. He tosses his cell phone to Nick.
Contact the military and get them to send a bomber to blow up this building.
How do I do that?
555-7600. Tell them it's a code Dragon Cloud. That should get you through. What are you waiting for?
555 what?
7600.
7600.
Philippe wedges another door shut.
It's busy.
Try again.
Nick runs to a payphone, picks up the receiver, and puts a coin in the slot. Torch blazing, Philippe runs over.
What did they say?
I can't get through. I don't know what's wrong.
Jean-Luc and Jean-Claude arrive.
We've secured the doors on the upper levels.
Where is Jean-Philippe and Jean-Pierre?
They didn't make it.
Nick, my men and I will hold him here. You'll have to go and get help.
Philippe puts the receiver down and gestures his men to follow.
Toi à gauche.
Okay.
Nick goes the opposite direction. Animal tries to batter open the washroom door. Audrey pokes at a panel in the ceiling with a mop. Animal points his torch up.
You think we could fit up in there?
Animal glances to the door.
One way to find out, right?
He dislodges a panel.
Push me up. Push me up.
Animal hoists Audrey towards the ceiling. Jean-Claude, with his rifle raised, walks down some steps. He sidles along a corridor. A set of doors bulges under the strain of the lizards battering from the other side. Jean-Luc walks along a corridor and goes towards an open set of doors. He looks inside. Behind him, in the low light, the shadows of two lumpen beasts appear on the wall. Jean-Luc turns to see the two reptiles approaching him, plodding slowly. They're followed by two more. Jean-Luc backs away in horror as one of the lizards lunges. Jean-Luc opens fire. Jean-Claude radios.
Jean-Luc? Jean-Luc, c'est moi. Qu'est-ce qui se passe? Jean-Luc, c'est moi.
Jean-Claude lowers his assault rifle and nervously approaches a set of doors. He peppers the door with bullet holes that let narrow shafts of light through them. The holes darken and the shafts of light disappear. The doors burst open, revealing a group of lizards that plod towards Jean-Claude. One of them pounces, then another. Nick runs down a set of steps. He glances from side to side, then runs along a curved corridor towards a set of doors. Pale blue light flickers through small square windows. Nick opens the doors and a lizard lunges at him. He quickly closes the doors and backs away. Nick runs the opposite way down the corridor past shiny stainless steel columns. He looks towards another entrance, which more lizards are barging their way through. Lizards burst into the corridor, throwing boxes of popcorn across the floor. They advance on Nick, who runs the opposite way, only to be confronted by more lizards. He stands frozen to the spot.
Oh, this is not good. This is not good.
He goes to an elevator and presses the up button repeatedly. The advancing beasts, with two ridges along the tops of their heads, make their way towards Nick, sideswiping each other with their snouts. The elevator arrives and the doors slide open. Nick gets in and frantically presses the button to close the doors. One of the beasts jams its head between the doors as they shut. Leaning against the back wall, Nick places the sole of his para boot on the top of the lizard's head and pushes it out. Relieved, Nick leans against the wall. At the third floor, the elevator opens to reveal another group of lizards.
Wrong floor.
The door closes. Philippe walks along a corridor. Audrey and Animal are in a ceiling duct above. With his assault rifle poised, Philippe shines his torch around. Above him, Animal opens a grill and looks down into the corridor. Audrey crawls up next to Animal. Philippe spins round to see the elevator open. At first it looks empty, then Nick peers out from the side.
It's me. It's me.
What happened?
They're loose. They're all over the place. I couldn't get out. No, I couldn't get out.
Audrey and Animal tumble down from above.
Who the hell are you?
Audrey. Here.
Hey.
Philippe stamps on Animal's camera.
You all right?
I think so.
Hey.
No cameras.
What are you, kid? Yeah, all right. Very good.
Do you have a radio, a walkie-talkie? Anything we can use to contact the outside?
What about the phones?
No, it's no good. Circuits are all jammed.
Oh, wait. I know a way. I know how we can get a message to the outside.
Lizards burst into the corridor.
This way, come on.
Audrey leads the others along the corridor. Animal goes back to his camera.
The tape!
One of the lizards kicks the camera aside. Animal makes a run for it. Animal follows Nick and Audrey through a set of doors. Philippe bolts the doors shut. Philippe runs up a staircase after the others.
Come on! Come on, the broadcast booth is right over here!
How do you know that?
Our network covers the Ranger games.
They ran to the door of the broadcast booth.
It's locked!
Wait, there's a code, there's a code.
Oh, come on, come on!
Philippe shoots out the keypad and kicks the door in.
I was just about to get it.
The network is on an intranet. It's a direct feed into our computer system.
Well, your station isn't going to have any easier time reaching the military than I did.
When you work with them, did they monitor all the news broadcasts?
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
All right, we'll go live, huh? Audrey, we'll broadcast right from in here. Hopefully they'll see it.
I'll try to get a message through.
Sitting in a computer, Audrey types on the keyboard. Philippe peers through a Louvre blind into an adjoining room. At the bottom of a staircase, a lizard bursts through a set of doors. A newscast runs on a bank of monitors in the WIDF news truck. Ed is snacking on crisps when text flashes across a computer screen. Pick up transponder CFX1 and watch the feed.
There's no Ranger game on tonight.
In the broadcast booth, Audrey is talking to a camera.
Ed, if you're seeing this, will you please put us on live? It's urgent. I know this sounds crazy, Ed, but please, you have to do it.
Audrey's on Ed's monitors.
Please just trust me.
I'm not putting you on live.
I don't think he's gonna do it.
Oh, yes, he will. All right, Ed? Come on, huh?
Animal turns the camera on the throngs of lizards in the arena.
You see that, Ed? They're gonna be all over the city if we don't stop them.
Ed takes off his glasses, horrified.
Give me a second, will you?
The newscast plays at the command center.
Finally, the time has come to return to our homes and get the diving pick up our lives.
Okay.
Our fears have been allayed, thanks to the heroic efforts of our boys in uniform.
Audrey appears on screen.
What's going on, Leon?
Elsie looks over.
Yeah, good. You're on.
Yes, yes. You're on. Go.
Audrey talks to camera.
We're live inside Madison Square Garden, where Dr. Niko Tatopoulos has discovered the beast's lair. Doctor, can you please tell us what's happening here?
She nods to Nick.
That's you. Yes, go. Go.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, we've discovered over 200 eggs.
Go get Hicks. Get Hicks!
Which a few moments ago began hatching. The creatures, though, just hatched are over 9 feet tall, and they've begun feeding.
Hicks joins Elsie.
When their food supply runs out here, they will attempt to hunt down food of their own outside of this nest.
Oh, my God.
If they get out, they'll multiply, and very soon a new species will emerge. One that could replace us as the dominant species of this planet. Each one of these amazing reptiles are born pregnant. Adaptive and cunning, these 200 could become 40,000 within this year. If the military is listening to this broadcast, they have to destroy this building immediately before these creatures can escape.
The mayor looks at Jean. In the arena, Philippe spies on the creatures as they close in.
So far, they're all trapped inside this building, but I don't think we can contain them for long. They're very strong, they're agile, and they're looking for food.
So I guess your theory of the creature nesting turned out to be correct after all.
Nick gives Audrey a questioning look.
Regardless of what happens to us, the most important thing is that this building be destroyed immediately before they can escape out into the city. Reporting live from Madison Square Garden, this is Audrey Timmons for WIDF News.
Audrey looks to Animal, who gives her the thumbs up. As she lets her hair down, Nick smiles.
Thanks, Audrey.
She looks into his eyes.
Sure.
They regard each other affectionately. Philippe is more concerned with the approaching beasts. At the command center, Colonel Hicks is on the phone.
That's affirmative. Let me spell it out for you. I want you to blow up Madison Square Garden.
In the broadcast booth, a message flashes up. You win. Military says you've got less than 6 minutes before you're all toast. Get out.
Well, the good news is they got that message. The bad news is we got less than 6 minutes to get out of the building.
Okay, party's over. Time to leave.
Philippe blows a window out with his gun. He tosses a reel of flex with one end attached in the room out into the arena. The lizards batter their way in. Philippe climbs onto the edge of the window frame.
Anyone care to join me?
He slides down the flex into the arena. The others peer over the edge.
Where did you find this guy?
He's from France.
A squadron of three F-18 jets head towards Manhattan.
Battalion 1-5s, IP inbound.
White beams glow in the dimly lit arena as Nick climbs down the flex to join the others.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Down a corridor.
Guys, this way, come on.
Oh my god, fish.
Nick, come on!
They've eaten all the fish.
Nick glances around the wreckage of the arena littered with remnants of the giant eggs, then races after the others, who disappear down a corridor.
Come on, Nick, this way!
Not this way! Not this way!
Audrey, Animal, and Philippe come charging back towards Nick, chased by a group of lizards. The gnarled-faced beasts lollop along the corridor, their jaws gnashing.
The escalators!
Hurry!
Lagging behind, Nick overturns a rack of basketballs and footballs and a bubblegum machine. As Nick rounds a corner, the beasts slip and tumble over each other. Nick watches from a staircase for a moment, then heads on. In the air, the F-18 jets...
Stallions, check master arms on. 2, 3.
Animal, Philippe, and Audrey race to the top of an escalator leading down into a grand hall which is full of writhing lizards. They stare in horror as Nick catches up.
I think I lost them!
Nick gawps at the beasts as they raise their heads towards the puny humans. An F-18 pilot flicks a switch, and a diagram of a rocket appears on a screen.
Stallion 1-5, showing a good laser track on top of the garden, selecting LGB.
How much time do we have left?
Less than 30 seconds.
Oh, God.
Behind them, the lizards slide along a corridor on the balls and bubblegum. Philippe looks towards a row of glass lampshades and shoots at one. It falls to the floor. The lizards disperse. Philippe shoots down the next light and leads the others towards the exit. He shoots out a third light and it crashes to the floor.
Let's go, come on!
Philippe, Audrey, Nick and Animal charge out of the doors and slam them shut, jamming a rifle through the handles. They run out onto the road. The lizards burst through the glass. The lead F-18 fires up its rockets.
Save your mavericks. Two away.
Two rockets career down towards the massive circular arena. Philippe and the others glance back as the disc-shaped roof judders and blows off. The lizards scream as the building blows apart in a succession of balls of flame. The pilot looks down.
Lead has good hits.
The three F-18s bank off, leaving the wreckage flaming within Manhattan's dense urban sprawl. Through pouring rain, small burning pieces of debris fall onto an upturned car. Audrey, Nick, Philippe and Animal are lying nearby. Nick turns to Audrey.
You all right?
Yeah. Somehow I never thought your life was this exciting.
You'd be surprised.
I'd like to find out.
They share an expectant smile for a moment, then lean towards each other and kiss. Bemused, Animal turns to Philippe.
How you doing? You alright?
I could use a coffee.
Philippe gets to his feet and stands beside Nick, who has his arm around Audrey. They gaze at the jagged remains of the walled arena. Mouth agape in wonder, Animal looks around. He gets to his feet. Godzilla raises his gargantuan head out of the rubble. Nick's eyes widen like saucers as Godzilla gets to his feet. Squatting, Godzilla leans down towards Nick and the others who stare agog. Godzilla nuzzles against one of his baby's corpses. The stiffened corpse wobbles slightly. Godzilla raises his head.
He looks angry.
Godzilla opens his foreboding jaws.
What do we do?
Running would be a good idea.
Let's go, man!
Godzilla casts giant shadows on the rubble-strewn street as he stomps after them. He He jams his head between rows of tall buildings and opens his savage jaws, then blows a tornado-like wind towards Nick, Philippe and Animal, who stop at a fence. Audrey falls to the ground. Mouth agape, Godzilla bears down on Audrey. Nick runs back and grabs her. They clamber over the fence as Godzilla batters it with his snout. Philippe runs to a yellow taxi cab.
Get in! Get in! What are you doing?
Godzilla blows another hurricane-like breath and cars fly down a street. Animal, Nick and Audrey get into the cab with Philippe, who pries us off the ignition with a knife and jams the knife into the hole. He waggles his knife and the engine starts. He races off down the rain-soaked street. Godzilla emerges and steps out in front of the cab. Philippe drives over one of Godzilla's enormous feet. The cab leaps into the air and lands on one of its front wheels. Godzilla turns and pursues the cab.
You better step on it, Mr. French!
Philippe turns a corner. Close behind is Godzilla, tossing vehicles aside like toys.
Take the FDR!
Please, the FDR in the rain?
Gotta be a map. He's getting larger!
Godzilla bounds along, gaining on the cab. Philippe careers around another corner. Godzilla leans down, snapping his jaws ferociously.
Oh, take a whistle highway!
Nick finds a map.
I got one! No, watch that.
Subway map!
Godzilla's in front. He leans down and opens his jaws. Philippe drives under them.
Broadway! Take Broadway!
Broadway. Affirmative. We're traveling down Broadway and make a right on 34th Street.
Sergeant O'Neill's driving with a fleet of military vehicles. They head straight for the cab and Godzilla. The cab splits through the military vehicles, which come to a halt in piles of debris.
That was O'Neill! Is everybody okay? Is everybody all right?
Turn around!
What? Do it!
No.
What?
Why?
Philippe does an abrupt about turn, sending Godzilla skidding over. Godzilla gets to his feet and resumes his pursuit. Nick wrenches the cab ID badge off the dashboard as Philippe hurtles towards O'Neill, who's on his radio.
Command center, command! Command, this is O'Neill for him!
As Philippe speeds past, Nick flings out the cab ID badge.
O'Neill!
The cab disappears down the street with Godzilla close behind. O'Neill retrieves the cab ID badge. Colonel Hicks radios O'Neill from the command center.
O'Neill, what's going on?
He's back, sir. He's back.
Godzilla is still alive. Lieutenant Rogers, are those F-18s still in the air?
Yes, sir. They're heading back to the base.
Turn them around!
The cab races down a narrow alley and out onto a street where Godzilla blows over cars with his mighty breath. The cars sail through the air and burst into flames. At a cab office, O'Neill leads a group of men down a darkened corridor using flashlights to guide them. O'Neill grabs a thick record book.
Here it is. Here it is.
Sir, what are we looking for?
Every cab company keeps a record of each of its cab's radio frequencies.
He flicks through the book, then runs his finger down a list of names.
Bingo.
On the street, Godzilla marches along behind the cab. Animal stares out of the back window.
Hey, get closer!
Nick frantically points straight ahead.
There, in there! The tunnel! Go in the tunnel!
Philippe drives into the tunnel. Behind them, Godzilla rams his head into the entrance.
They've got it blocked off!
The cab swerves to a halt in front of barricades. Godzilla pushes his head in further.
Now what would you like to do?
Turn off the lights!
Philippe turns off the lights. O'Neill tunes in a radio.
Nick, are you there?
Nick!
O'Neill!
Nice trick with the cab ID. Where the hell are you?
You have to help us. We're in the Park Avenue tunnel.
In front of them, a claw reaches in. Philippe reverses the cab.
Whoa. He's got us trapped in here.
Okay, Nick.
Listen to me. You guys have got to lure him out into the open
so we can get a clear shot at him. Over.
No problem there. You want us to wash him up for you too?
Nick nervously turns to Audrey.
Where's the nearest suspension bridge?
Brooklyn.
Let's go.
And how would you like us to do that?
This thing have high beams?
With the lights out, Philippe accelerates the cab towards the mouth of the tunnel, where Godzilla continues to flail about.
No!
Philippe puts the headlights on full beam and Godzilla rears up, allowing Philippe to drive out of the tunnel between Godzilla's legs. O'Neill radios Hicks.
Sir, he's headed toward the Brooklyn Bridge.
Target is heading toward the Brooklyn Bridge, sir. Direct the F-18s to the Brooklyn Bridge.
A sign reads Brooklyn Bridge, exits to Manhattan. Philippe drives out onto the bridge. Audrey and Animal look behind.
He's not following us!
Really?
They career past abandoned cars. Rubble bursts out of the bridge as Godzilla rams his head up through it. Philippe slams on the brakes and spins the car straight into Godzilla's open mouth. Godzilla clamps his mammoth jaws around the vehicle and rises up, tearing a street lamp out of the bridge as he goes.
Well, you gotta be kidding me, man! We're in his mouth! We're in his mouth!
Godzilla gnashes on cables, sending sparks flashing through his mouth.
You're going the wrong way, man! You're going the wrong way!
Will you shut up now?
Godzilla madly waves his head from side to side. Nick grabs an electrical cable that's hanging out of its mouth and rams its sparking end into Godzilla's teeth. Godzilla widens his jaws and flails wildly down.
Okay, got it! Go!
Philippe guns the engine and soars out of Godzilla's mouth, landing nose first. Godzilla leaps up and runs along after the cab as it tears past the steel, crisscross sides of the bridge. Godzilla's heavy feet crush the pedestrian walkway above the traffic lanes. He then leaps up onto the top of one of the tall, double-arched upright supports.
Move it!
Having leapt down from the upright, Godzilla thunders on after the cab, tearing up the steel cross pieces as he goes. The bridge strains under the weight of the beast. At the second upright support, Godzilla pokes his snout under one of the arches. As he does so, the brick structure begins to crumble, entwining him in the suspension cables hanging from it. Nick picks up the radio.
O'Neill, it works!
The suspension cables fall on Godzilla like a huge net.
He's caught in the suspension cables! Do it! Now!
Roger that.
The F-18s are back.
Stallion 1-5, Tally 1 on the bridge.
Lock on and fire at will.
The three F-18s all fire.
Two away!
As Godzilla struggles to break free of the cables, a succession of rockets pierce his rump.
Go!
Philippe roars along the bridge as it starts to collapse. The cab dives off the bridge and skids to a halt in front of a large group of military vehicles. Godzilla lolls his gnarled head up and down in agony. At the command center...
Direct hit, but the target is still moving, sir.
We'll circle around and fire again!
The F-18s fire another onslaught. Godzilla is reduced to a giant, swaying, lumpen mass as the rockets penetrate his side and burst into golden flames. Nick, Animal, Audrey and Philippe have emerged from the cab. They gaze at Godzilla, who is lit with moving searchlights. Nick stands in the pouring rain, staring, transfixed. Godzilla writhes and wails under the suspension cables draped across his body. In his death throes, Godzilla rears skywards and stretches his neck up. Nick fearfully runs back as Godzilla starts to fall. Godzilla crumples, flattening the cab. A lone car tire rolls across the debris. Animal and Nick emerge from behind a pile of metal boxes and stare at the beast. Sheets of rain lash down on Philippe and Audrey, who step a little closer to Godzilla. Nick, entranced, slowly walks up to the felled beast. The searchlights cast their glow across Godzilla's angular reptilian form, which is slumped across twisted fencing and rubble. Military personnel stay by their vehicles as Nick stands by a streetlight that appears thin and spindly next to Godzilla's dormant mass. Nick regards Godzilla's now motionless features, staring in wonderment. Audrey is behind him, silhouetted against the searchlights. Nick fixes his gaze on Godzilla's right eye. Upper and lower scaly eyelids gently close. Audrey walks up behind Nick and takes his hand, breaking the spell that the beast has over him. Nick is torn for a moment. He glances behind him, then back at Godzilla for one last time. He puts his arm round Audrey and walks towards a crowd of onlookers that has gathered. The crowd is huddled under a canopy of umbrellas which they raise en masse in adulation. The scene is broadcast on WIDF News with the caption Godzilla defeated. Amongst the group of people in her house, Animal's wife Lucy is watching on a TV. She grins and raises her arms, then, seeing Animal, freezes.
That's my husband! It's my husband! Oh my... I'm gonna kill him!
At the command center, Elsie grabs Craven and kisses him.
Oh my... Oh God.
Elsie looks repulsed, Craven grins goofily. The mayor takes Jean to one side.
Wait. We can use this. The mayor who destroyed Godzilla.
I don't think we should exploit this. It could backfire.
Listen to me, idiot. Do the thinking around here. It's a magnificent idea.
You know what I think about you and your campaign?
He gives the mayor a thumbs down.
Jean, wait a minute. Where are you going? I need you.
O'Neill, do you read me?
O'Neill answers.
Yes, sir.
That's one hell of a job, soldier! That's one hell of a job!
O'Neill closes his eyes and smiles, relieved.
Roger that, sir.
Reporters flock to Nick and Audrey.
Sorry, folks, I've already promised my story as an exclusive to another reporter.
Cayman?
We did it! We got the exclusive!
Audrey, you're beautiful.
We did? I don't think so.
Just remember you work for me, okay?
Not anymore, Chuck. I quit.
She pulls a confident smile and pushes past him. Animal walks through.
She quits.
Carrying his camera, Animal opens the video compartment to find it empty.
All right, folks, let's keep it moving.
Audrey, you take the tape out of the camera?
No.
I mean, I couldn't have just lost it.
Where's Philippe?
Nick fumbles for his cell phone.
Hello?
Hello?
It's Philippe.
Where are you?
Tell your friends I will send a tape after I've removed a few items from it.
I understand.
I just wanted to say au revoir and thank you for your help, my friend.
Well, wait. Hello?
Nick stares at his cell phone.
Au revoir.
Philippe strolls nonchalantly down a dingy alley. Nick smiles at Audrey.
Who was that French guy anyway?
Just some insurance guy.
Did he say anything about my tape?
Yeah, he said something about your tape.
Well, what did he say? Does he have my tape?
Yeah, he has your tape.
Animal walks off through the crowd with Nick, whose arm is around Audrey's shoulder. Smoke hangs above the wreckage of Madison Square Garden. The corridors within continue to burn. Fluorescent bulbs explode in flashes of white light. In a changing room, a solitary egg remains. The egg's heavily textured surface is momentarily illuminated by the flashes of bright light. Cracks appear and a baby Godzilla bursts out. ITFC audio description by Alan Blyton, Matthew Vickers and Adam English.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
close my eyes.